Welcome back to the Ride and Laugh podcast. If you love mountain biking, you are in the right place. Picture your last group ride. You had a blast. Everyone's back at the parking lot. The stoke is high. You're talking bikes. You're talking tech. You're talking nutrition. You're talking progression. Everyone's stoked. You're talking bikes. That's what we do here each week on the Ride and Laugh podcast. Let's drop in. Sage, how are you today?
Danny, I am doing so good. Can I just give a quick shout out to our friends in Australia? I don't know what's happening. We hit a chord down there, and our buddies down under are coming through on the downloads. Do we need to put Australia on the bucket list here?
Yes, definitely. We definitely need to put Australia on the bucket list. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Australia. They got some serious trails there. I know that some of the YouTubers have been down there, and I get this email. I think it's a magazine called Flow Magazine, and it's an Australian magazine, and they're always reviewing. I keep getting it because they have really good bike reviews and product reviews in there. Everything's in Australian dollars, and they talk about getting it on if they can get it on the island. Stuff does look more expensive there, which stinks, I guess. But nonetheless, they also show a lot of the riding, and man, it looks awesome. Yeah, it looks absolutely awesome. So, but anyway, any of our international listeners, any listener at all, we appreciate all the support, and we're glad that the channel's growing and everyone's enjoying it and interacting, and we're having a blast doing it. So, yeah, thanks for listening along. Ride and laugh. That's what we're talking about. We're riding and we're laughing, and hopefully you're doing both of them with us. I don't know if any, you think anyone's listening to us while they ride.
Oh my God, I hope not.
If you are, I'd like a public service announcement right now. Stop and put on some music. For Christ's sake, this isn't healthy. Too much laughing. Someone might be practicing their hump technique, and while they're listening, and it's all going sideways. And we're not liable. We're not liable for anyone crashing while they're listening to us. Yeah. It's in the small print. We're not liable.
That's right. Send all those complaints to the Ride and Laugh 2 at Gmail.
Yes.
Not the one.
A callback from the original episode. Yes. A callback from the original episode, everybody. 25 episodes ago. Yes, that's very good. That's very pertinent. Ride and Laugh 2 at Gmail. Yes. Yeah. Well, the podcast that we are going to be talking about as our last podcast was the old school tech lines with new school riders. That was where we met Hunter and shoot. What was
Sawyer.
I wasn't ready for it. Hunter and Sawyer. Yeah. Cut. Added that. Hunter and Sawyer. Yeah. There you go. Yes. Both awesome dudes. And so we got some great comments, and Slanted Ground was stoked that his rider was mentioned. And Slanted Ground, check it out. Great Instagram, great channel, but also really cool apparel. And Sage wears it from time to time. It's cool stuff. So check that out. Uh-huh. And Hunter is a Slanted Ground rider, so that's cool. And then we got a really funny comment from Jared at JJC Carpentry, who was saying, me overhearing yelling in my car, yelling restraining order. That was the part where we couldn't remember what the term was. And I said, people are sitting in the cars right now, probably yelling restraining order. And so I thought that was pretty funny. And then we got more single speed feedback. Just when you think, you know, last time we talked about additional single speed feedback, and we're like, well, what about fixies? And then Joe at Tomer said, speaking of fixies, what about the fixie that only has one wheel? What about mountain bike unicycles? Okay. Have you seen these guys out there? Have you seen someone mountain bike unicycling?
Yo. I have. Yeah, the extreme unicycle you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a knobby tire unicycle on the trails.
It's insane. They had the big old tires.
Did we see them at Sterling? Did we see them at Sterling when we were there?
We did see one somewhere. Yes. It's, you know what, though? That's like a whole nother level. That is just insane what those guys can do. Those guys and girls are just, unbelievable.
So if you're good at mountain bike unicycle, would you just be like amazing at mountain biking or mountain bike trials, right? I mean, if you can hop around on one wheel like that, should we learn how to unicycle? Should that... You never see any mountain bike instruction saying, you know what would really help? Unicycling. I feel like if I can get around my pump track on a unicycle, I am probably can do anything.
Yeah. And are they clipped in? I guess you have to be clipped in, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I think you're falling. I think you're jumping off of that thing constantly, especially in the beginning. I mean, the guys that actually get out onto the trail must be pretty good, but
yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought that was a really good point. And I have seen those guys. I totally forgot about that it's not really mountain biking. Yeah. I mean, it's a different sport, you know, but
I think so.
I don't know. I see at my local bike shop at Keswick, every time I go to the mechanic counter, they are selling a unicycle there. And I'm always tempted to buy it. I know exactly what's going to happen. I'll try it once or twice and never use it. Didn't Rich have one? He did.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We went to the party and everyone tried to. Yeah. Everyone was trying to unicycle drunk. How did you do at it? I feel like you would do the best, the quickest, and you don't drink.
I don't. That's a good point.
You were sober.
I did all right. I did all right. It was definitely a unique experience. So yeah. I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
All right. Unicycle sponsors, if you're listening, I'm interested in trying a unicycle. Okay, I got to get big unicycle on our side, you know?
yeah. Riding unicycle. I like it.
Yeah. It'll be an offshoot pod. Absolutely. A half an episode. I think we did all the unicycle content that you could probably do. I think we're already done with it.
That's it. We're spent.
Yeah. And then, so if you're not subscribed to if you're listening to the podcast, and if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, definitely subscribe because Sage is putting out these hot take videos. So you can get a lot of the little video content that we talk about. I mean, I think watching on YouTube is awesome because Sage is just a master editor. I mean, every time I watch the video, I'm so impressed, dude. I'm like blown away by how well you're putting this video into video and pictures and relevant. We talked about the Specialized Brain and Specialized Brain websites popping up. We talked about Trainer Road and he's got Trainer Road content. And it's just... it's very, very impressive. It's very well done. And so I appreciate it. I have much gratitude. Thanks, and listener, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It's really cool. But I understand listening on the podcast, like in the car, you know, that's a lot of times the easiest thing. But subscribe and click the bell on the YouTube because these hot takes come out and they're what, like 3 to 5 minutes long? And they're clips of the podcast, and they have some really interesting content, and they have a different set of comments also. So you did a hot take, ride and laugh hot take on mountain bike innovations, and you did it on the dropper post.
Yes.
And we had two people and probably even more thought it, but we had two people comment, Terrapin Station and Brian Warshaw 129, both commented, I use my dropper more than my gears.
Yes.
So, you know, just how impactful that dropper post is. And we're going to have more content coming up on the most innovative and the most important mountain bike innovation. And we'll have some debate going with that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think you would have to you'd have to compare the dropper post with probably the suspension fork, right? As far as like, if you're going to say the two.
You mean in terms of importance?
Would you rather ride a rigid bike or a bike with a bike with front suspension but no dropper?
I think I need a dropper. I know it's crazy, but
ooh,
even
okay.
Listen, I mean, we did the rigid. You know, I would absolutely rather have a dropper because your arms and legs can act as the suspension. You know, so getting the seat out of the way will give you more room to kind of absorb some of that shock. I remember that when we were single speeding on the rigids, like it was absolutely important to be able to be loose on the bike and be able to move around, and having that saddle just hit you in the crotch or in the rear end, that was not comfortable, man. So I'd absolutely go dropper before I went suspension. I mean,
I think I'd probably go suspension. I would beat you if I had suspension and no dropper post and you had a dropper post and a rigid bike. I would beat you on every downhill. I would, right?
Well, that's true.
We're going to get into it. That's not what this episode's about. We're going to get into it because we have lots of debates like that coming up, right?
So, yes.
And, you know, go ahead and comment ride and laugh one at Gmail. And the YouTube channel, comments of the YouTube channel are extra points, extra bonus, because it does help the algorithm. So,
hey, now.
But we'll take comments anywhere we can get them. We'll take communication anywhere we can get it, whatever's easiest for you, listener. But the YouTube is king, right, Sage? It does help the channel.
Well, you know me. I'm a video guy, so, you know, I love YouTube. Yeah. It's biased.
So YouTube comments, RideLamp1@gmail.com. What do you think? Dropper post or full suspension? Or should dropper post be going up against something else? Because we're going to be putting together a bracket.
Yes.
And we're in the process of doing that. And I think we already know what, you know, number one is going to be. But it's got to have some competition. And so is it the suspension fork? Or is it something else? So let us know what you think. And we'll be dropping more of these as we go. More of these verses. And that's going to be a lot of fun. So, I did want to comment on the dropper post. Brian Warshaw, he said he uses the dropper more than gears. And then he mentioned having the height right. And I didn't even know what that was. There are people that have been mountain biking before us. And it was like, it's the original dropper post. Do you know what it is?
No, I had to look it up when he mentioned it. I was like, what's a high right?
Oh, okay. I looked it up on his comment also. And it looks awesome. I was like blown away by this like really simple, like spring, and you had to reach down and I didn't get a real good feel of how to use it, but it was the original dropper. And so I thought that was pretty cool. If this guy was using that, if Brian was using that. And you know, we were, so you know what it made me think of? We didn't talk about this when we talked about the dropper post in that innovations video or podcast where we talked about it quite a bit. We talked about getting into the dropper post, and there was like a period of, I want to say like 4 or 5 rides where you weren't sure. I had gotten one and you weren't sure if you wanted to spend the money. And so you just rode without a seat. You rode without a seat.
No, that's you not did because that. Of that. I did. I no, did I do was, that. Yes.
I know you did it for training, but I thought you also did it to see what it would feel like, whether or not moving that seat post would be a big enough deal.
No. That was solely for training, for sure. Yeah.
Purely for training.
And totally a wacky idea, by the way. I do not recommend that.
Yeah. I mean, was that your idea? I mean, was that on a single speed? You did quite a bit, if I recall.
Yeah, I did it on, I did it on my single speed. I did it on my geared hardtail. I would still do it today. I wouldn't recommend it because it's dangerous. So the way that I had done it is this is back when we rode with saddlebags. And so I would take the saddlebag off of the back of the saddle and I would place that over the hole where the seat post would come up. So there would be some protection there because otherwise, you know, you have the seat post, you know, hole it's going up your rear end. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but my goodness, I mean, that has to be one of the most effective training methods, that I have ever employed. I mean, you literally get no breaks. You are just standing and cranking. And I don't think you realize how much you use the saddle between your legs to control the bike. And when there's no saddle there, you really have to have good core strength to angle this bike in. I mean, your bike just wants to go, you know, and to be able to use your body to control that bike, I got to tell you, Danny, it was really effective. But like I said, I don't recommend it. It's quite scary and dangerous.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be encouraging everyone to go take your seat post and your saddle off of your bike and ride the hardest trails you can find as young Sage once did. Yeah, and, you know, let's see what happens.
Yes.
Now, again, read the fine print. We're not liable for anything. If you're listening to this and riding without a saddle at the same time, strike two, listener. What we are going to get into this week is quite the opposite of completely burning yourself out by forcing yourself to stand for the entire ride. We're going to be talking about recovery and probably a multiple podcast kind of episode. So when, you know, as we're getting into these subjects, we're calling them the primer, you know, this is kind of the entry into recovery with some tips that have worked for us. Everyone's different, but there's general tips I think that work for most bodies. And there's things that we have learned through our years of mountain biking, and we're totally open to getting some more feedback on this. So comment on the YouTube, RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com on anything that we mention or anything that we forgot as far as how you recover. So we work really hard. We talk about how much we work out, and we've talked about motivation to get working out, and then so now you're in it and you're getting tired. And how do you know when to take a break, whether it be during the week or in general? You know, I mean, we can go back and talk about how much we used to burn ourselves out. Mm-hmm. And we just never stopped. I mean, you were taking the saddle off of your bike and we were never stopping riding. And we just did so many dumb things.
I have to tell you, Danny, we are probably the least qualified to talk about this subject because you and I are terrible at recovery. I mean, yes. it's like, I remember like back when we first started, and this was like, what, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
They just said they were the least qualified. And we're supposed to listen to this for another 40 minutes. Let's see what they talk about next week.
But you in particular, you are the worst, because I would often tell you, or you would call me and you're like, I think I should take 2 weeks. I think I'm going to start the 2 weeks. And then literally like a week into it, you're already riding your bike. I'm like, what happened to the 2 weeks off? You are the worst.
I know. Yeah. Well, so if we want to get into the 2 week thing, I was listening to the Trainer Road podcast, and they're big on recovery. Their goal is for you to use their workouts, but to get stronger. And you have to, you've heard this before, right? That you break down the muscles when you work out, and then you get stronger in the recovery. So if you're always just going and wearing yourself out, and then of course, you know, then you're not getting that recovery time. You're not getting stronger. And of course, you'll know when your workouts start to suffer, or if you can't get through a workout or you can't get through a ride, you know, so there's an intuition there. And I think to dip into overtraining, like you're going to really start like not sleeping well. And like you have to really, maybe losing your appetite. You have to really push yourself, and people do it. People do it. They think that it's just work, 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 but there has to be some mindfulness in there. And that's something I've learned as I've gotten older. And I've also given myself some tools, and we'll talk about that, because I do tend to push a little bit harder than the average Joe. And maybe if you're listening to this, maybe you understand, because, you know, getting up that hill and feeling strong when you're on the bike is really awesome. And it's really what we're going for. And when you start getting fit, it's really fun. Or maybe if your thing is flying downhill and just being able to hold your solid position the whole time. You know, if you're doing enduros and just being able to just be fit. It's a different type of fitness, but still mountain bike fitness. And so we're still training to get there. The 2 weeks is something that I heard on the Trainer Road podcast, where they said you want to be taking 2 weeks off of the bike, not training on the bike at all. For 2 weeks. And so we would usually look for, we're in the Northeast, where in December or January, maybe February, the weather would get bad enough that like, okay, the conditions are terrible. I'm going to grab my 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So what was your experience with the 2 weeks? What was your experience before we did that? And after we started doing that?
You know what, Danny, I remember when you first found out about that and you had a conversation with me, like, you know, should we be doing this? And you and I fought this like forever, because we just even in the winter, like we have fat bikes. Yeah. We're like, no, why would we want to, just because it's winter, why would we not want to ride? And I think one year, I think I got hurt or something like that, something to that extent where I couldn't ride for 2 weeks. I think it was an injury. But regardless, I came back from that and I was riding like a demon. And I was like, oh my gosh, there is some actual science and truth behind this 2 weeks. And ever since then, I literally take off 2 weeks where I do absolutely nothing. And I mean nothing. I don't do runs. I don't do basketball. I literally just let my mind and body completely heal. I don't do weightlifting. Maybe I'll go for walks or hikes. I'll do some fasting. But for 2 weeks, I do absolutely nothing. And I have to tell you, the first couple days, I think we had talked about this in the last pod, but like you kind of get used to working out. And so when you don't get to work out, you kind of get depressed. It definitely happens. You know, that first like couple days, you're just like itching to get out. And you're like, no, let's do this thing. You know, put on a couple YouTube videos and just let your body relax. It really makes a huge difference. I don't know, Danny, how about you?
Well, I have a little bit of a different approach. So when I do remember listening to that podcast, and they've talked about this a couple times before, and they talk about that it's okay to do some cross training. Yeah. So I don't, and you know, I have a really hard time doing absolutely nothing. So I don't take it completely off. I probably will still lift weights. I'll probably still do like some core workouts or some Pilates or something like that.
Okay.
But I'm not riding on Sunday. Usually the 2 weeks, we usually like do actually 13 days so we can ride on the last Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think we ever really missed two rides. That would be asking way too much. We love mountain biking. We're doing a mountain bike podcast. Like, who's surprised by this, you know?
That's right.
But I also find that there's a little bit of the mental letdown, maybe of, you know, the mindset letdown of not working out. But usually if I'm doing the 2 weeks, I've been working pretty hard. You've been working pretty hard. And there's also a relief of just like, you know what? I'm just sleeping in tomorrow. You know, I mean, I get up early to ride my trainer, and I get up early to work out, and you know, I'm just sleeping in. And then I'm not thinking about getting my water bottles ready the night before or getting anything, you know, planned out, getting my gear out. So, you know, part of, I think, working out in the morning is being ready the night before so that when you get up, you just kind of flow into it. And so that little part of your brain that's like, I don't feel like doing this. So you just kind of like cruise on past that. Yeah. But all the mental stuff of just like not worrying about it, and then not worrying about where we're riding on Sunday. And, you know, and you and I will still meet for breakfast. So, you know, we still get our mountain bike talk in and our hangout time. But there's a little bit of a relief there for the first few days. And then I start feeling like, I want to be doing something. And I would definitely up the walking and things like that, because I just like to be active. But there's a lot of things that we do during a regular recovery day. So just big ride on Sunday, and then maybe you take Monday off. I actually lift weights on Monday, but I got to fit it all in somehow. So,
you know what, Danny, before you go into that, just a quick question on the 2 weeks. How do you know when it's time to take that 2 weeks? Like, what are some signs that you pick up? Like, oh, you know what? It's time to take the big break. Cause I mean, we'll get into the smaller breaks during your workouts and even like every 4 months, you know, you put in like a 2 or 3 day recovery. But how do you know when you need to take the 2 week or the 3 week, you know, like, how do you know when that happens, when you should do that?
That's a really good question. And I feel like life oftentimes gives it to you. So again, just using your intuition and not fighting, you know, like if something happens where, you know, with maybe it's the weather or maybe it's equipment or maybe it's your, you know, the trainer's not working or something like that, you know, like look for signs that, okay, this is actually a good time to take a couple weeks off, you know, or maybe even if you're looking at the weather and being like, these rides aren't going to be that great. I know that Trainer Road like goes in between training plans. So it starts you, when you first start using it, it starts you at sweet spot, and then it might move you to threshold, and then it goes to VO2 max, and then it goes to specialty. If you have it lined up for a specific event or a race, then it will have you peaking at that point. But if it's December, January, February, and you're not doing it, it's not race season, or even like travel season, if you're just kind of like Sage and I, where you're not racing, but you're still training. So I don't really have necessarily an event on my Trainer Road calendar. So sometimes there's just natural breaks in there. But I think it's going to have to be intuitive, and you have to look for it. You have to look for it. You have to be thinking, I need to take a couple weeks off. When's a good time to do that? And, you know, because now I got all this indoor training stuff. Like, it's not just weather. I mean, I could just keep going. So, and I didn't take 2 weeks off this year. I broke my face, and I was like, well, that's my break.
Yeah,
literally.
That's right.
But
it was a huge break. Yeah.
Yeah. It was way bigger than I want. But at the same time, like, I trained really hard to get back to where I am.
Yeah.
Would it benefit me to take a longer break, you know, even though it's been 6 or 7 months, it hasn't been a year. You know, I don't know. I am pretty tired.
I find that usually by the end of the season, my heart rate is a little bit higher. You know, like when I'm doing like a regular, and I track my workouts, you know, so I like the numbers. And so I'll just study them. And we're talking like minuscule amounts. It'll start to go up. And it's like, why am I, working so hard? Why is my body working so hard to produce the same amount of output? And that's a pretty good telltale sign that, okay, your body's working a little bit harder than it should to reach the performance levels that you had previously. That's a pretty good sign. And the other thing is a more obvious one, and that is I've gotten dead legs. I've gotten dead legs several times in my riding career.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to touch on that before, because we went into dead legs. I mean, you got it first.
Yeah.
But then I got it also. And that was what I think I felt like that was where we were like, okay, we really need to take some time off. Like you can't go full speed year round. So yeah. Explain what was happening on those, on that dead leg kind of feeling.
It's crazy, Danny. And again, you can look at your heart rate. It'll tell you, I mean, you're literally pushing as hard as you can, but nothing's happening. You can't produce any kind of meaningful power. And I'm not saying that you can't ride, because you still can ride. It's just, you can't get into that top end power. So when you get to a climb and you're just like, I just don't have it. And then you're just like, that feeling of, I just don't have it starts to affect every ride, you know, because dead legs isn't like we all have off days. This isn't an off day. This is like, I have consecutive rides where you get this feeling of dead legs. That's when you know, okay, you know what? I've overexerted here. I need to take a break. You know, not just, you were talking about the mental. This is more about the physical as well. And just letting your body have that 2 to 3 weeks of just let it heal, let it recover, get all those stress hormones out, you know, everything. And just relax, relax, relax. You know, it's so important. Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you get into the dead legs, it's almost too late. Like I would say if you can kind of catch it before you get to the dead legs, you could get away with taking 2 weeks. If you get to dead legs, you might need more than 2 weeks, you know, then that sucks.
Yeah. Right. So don't push. If you're new to mountain biking, you know, don't push yourself too far. You have to really listen to your body. And so if you go out on a ride and you don't have it, that happens once in a while. If you go out on the next ride, you don't have it. Think about it. And then the third ride, like, okay, you know, your body's really telling you something. And especially if you're not getting the same quality of sleep or you're starting to get cranky, you know, or anything like that during the day, there's other signals. If you're just like really dragging, there's other signals that you're starting to dip into overtraining. And look, we're not pros, so we're not going to train like they do, but we also don't recover like they do. You know, we don't have personal chefs and we don't get 10 hours of sleep. And oh, by the way, like most of us have other jobs and other stressors, and there's other things going on, and it's a lot. It's a lot to balance. And so if this is our hobby, this should be fun. So if you find that you're getting out there and you're not having fun and you're not feeling good, then give yourself a little bit of break, you know, fire up a little bit more YouTube, a little bit more ride and laugh. I mean, you can go back and listen to our past episodes multiple times. I would say, I know a lot of people listen to podcasts on 2x speed or 1.5x time speed. I would say slow us down to 0.5, 0.8, you know, really stretch it out.
Slow us down.
Welcome back. If you love mountain bike. Now everyone's like, 2x speed. I got to speed up this segment just to hear Dan speak in a normal voice. All right. What do you do during that 2 week break? Are you concerned about gaining weight if you're that inactive during your 2 week break?
Yo, that's where the multi-day fasting really comes in handy. And I would caution against using that too much, because part of taking that 2 week break is letting your body heal. Well, if you're depriving it of, you know, proteins and nutrients and stuff like that, that's also not good. So you have to kind of balance it a little bit. Oftentimes when I'll do a 2 week break or a 3 week break, I will do, you know, at least one multi-day fast, meaning I'll go at least 48 hours. And if I don't do that, then maybe I'll try 172, you know, and that's, you know, God, there's so many benefits. It's not just not putting on weight, but I mean, when you get into those 72 hour fasts, you can start to rebuild stem cells and stuff like that. There's just so many benefits. But that is a healthy tool.
You can Google the benefits of fasting. And I really, I've done a ton of research on this. Very, very interesting stuff. And sorry to interrupt, Sage, but I was just going to say that I think the 48 to 72 hours is really the sweet spot. If you hit that 48, you're getting a lot of the benefits. 72, you're really starting to, like, if you have like a nagging injury and you can get to a 72-hour fast. And like Sage said, I mean, you get intestinal stem cells around 24. So just on a one-day fast, you can like start rebuilding your gut lining and that sort of thing. But if you're looking at like actual stem cells, like 72 hours, if you got like a wonky knee or something like that, like your body can really start repairing itself.
Yeah.
It's just real quick. The basic idea is that there's no food coming in. So the body is using its own body fat. It's using its own energy and it's looking at anything that's inefficient, any cells that aren't working right. And it's saying, okay, we need to be at optimal efficiency right now. And so it shuts those cells down. It's called autophagy. It shuts those cells down and it cleans them out. And it only leaves the best cells left. And so you're just getting stronger and, of course, leaner. And then, of course, you're becoming fat adapted in that time. And so we'll get more into, I think we'll probably do a podcast on fasting and multi-day fasting and what you can expect and training on fasting, because Sage is really involved in all of that. I would just want to second what you said. If you do a 48 or a 72-hour fast or even a 24-hour fast, do not go into a calorie deficit. You have to get that protein back. You have to eat well. Don't put sugar in afterwards and process food and waste all of your hard work of not eating, because it does take some willpower. But refuel with like real whole foods and then continue to eat. So if you're going to do the multi-day fast, I knew you were going to talk about multi-day fasting on your 2-week break, because you always do one and it is a great time to do it.
Yeah.
But you don't want to go into a calorie deficit and then not fully recover. I mean, the whole idea is to recover. So the fast is a tool, but the main, keep your eye on the prize, which is recover and come back stronger.
That's right.
So if you're not sure you can do that, then I would say don't fast. But the fast is a really interesting tool to use.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Danny, how about recovery during your training, like during the week? Are you taking a recovery day during the week or every 2 weeks? I mean, how are you? And you said you have a training plan because you're following Trainer Road. Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So it's hard to, you're balancing life and you're balancing training. Yeah. I'm on a low volume Trainer Road plan. So that's 3 days a week. And one of those is the weekend ride. So I don't do that. I can't do Trainer Road 90-minute ride on Saturday and then be strong on Sunday. I would need a recovery day.
Yeah.
So I usually do Trainer Road twice a week. For me, that looks like Tuesday and Thursday with a Sunday ride. And then I lift weights on Monday and Wednesday. I also rip row on Wednesday. When I lift weights, that's about a half an hour. I do 15 minutes of weightlifting, and then I do 15 minutes of core work on Monday and Wednesday. So sometimes I'll take Friday off. That's kind of, if I'm really tired, I'll take Friday and Saturday off. But a lot of times Friday, maybe I'll do like a light Trainer Road ride or a light workout. And I have a pump track in my backyard, which is a Trail Sage video. Highly recommend it if you want to see Dan's pump track.
Yes.
It's awesome. Sticks and stones. Thank you, Sean. If you're in the Northeast and you want a pump track in your backyard or your community wants a pump track, Sean is a master builder. He builds awesome, awesome stuff. So sticks and stones, absolutely. I can't recommend him enough. Plus, super, super guy. But he's just a savant when it comes to building. When it comes to building dirt features and designing. I mean, I have a pretty, it's not a big backyard, and he put in a really fun little pump track. So he's awesome. But so I also try to fit in the pump track and I go for walks with my kids every day after dinner. Highly recommend the walks. Walking is awesome for you. And that's really low impact. And it's just good for you. So I really only look to take one day off, and it's probably not enough, but it's kind of what works for me. I do like being active, and it's just some days are going to be harder than others. What about you? How many days off are you taking during the regular, anything, I guess the other 49 weeks of the year or whatever?
Right. I think you had mentioned this several times, but it's a lot of times, work and life kind of dictate when I take off. But let's say that I had a stellar week and I was able to get in an activity every day, which is what I strive for. I try and get something in, whether it's a run or a bike ride. I try and get something in at least 6 days out of the week. And the day that I typically always take a rest, no matter what, is always Monday, because everything culminates into that Sunday ride. Like that's the reward for all the hard work is that Sunday ride. Yeah. So I'm usually pretty beat. And so Monday just happens to be always my rest day. You'll never see me work out on a Monday unless it's
Saturday, on a trip. I rest before our big ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually do a run, you know, so that I'm not using my bike legs. But other than that, I'll fill in the rest of my week with all different kinds of workouts. And I'll usually try and incorporate at least a HIIT ride or a HIIT run, some kind of really hard effort. And sometimes I'll even do two. So it's really important for me to give Monday to myself just to have a break for my legs. And I just want to note, every day I try and roll my legs. I have a foam roller. It happens to be electric. That is amazing. Like if you want to go hard.
You do that every day?
At least every other day, at least. And it depends on how hard I go. And it also depends on how I'm feeling. You know, I did a single speed ride today and I felt it. And I was like, you know what? I got to hit the roller today. And that probably means I have to hit it tomorrow too. So, you know, it's one of those things, the roller, like you do it as much or as little as you want. You can't over roll. I've never heard of anybody like,
I don't use it enough. I mean, so listener, he's talking about a foam roller, which everyone knows about. And then if you were to go on Amazon or into your sporting goods store and look at foam rollers, they go from like just pure foam round with different densities to like pretty spiky. So like kind of mimicking the deep tissue massage.
Yes.
And then my wife, as a gift for me, because I was foam rolling all the time, I want to say this is like 8 or 9 years ago, got me a vibrating foam roller.
Yes. So
this one's got like three different settings. It sounds like it's gas powered. I mean, it's so loud.
Oh my God. It's so loud. So loud, Danny. Oh my gosh.
But it's incredible. It's incredible. So when I first got this thing, I was getting like, I want to say a weekly deep tissue massage. I was going and getting this deep tissue massage and I had the same massage person and I think it was 60 minutes. And I was just like, you know, just focus on my legs because I'm a mountain biker. So, and she would just dig in there. I mean, and she's like, I don't understand how you're not crying. Like the amount of pressure I'm putting on these muscles. And I would just think about mountain biking. I would just think about different routes. I would just distract my brain with mountain biking. At the time I was riding this place called Belmont Plateau all the time. And I was just like thinking about different routes. And just trying to distract myself and just not be in my body. It hurt so much.
It's so painful. And then I got painful.
And I do recommend massage. I mean, massage is great if you can get it, but massage is expensive and it's time consuming. But like on that 2 week break, if you know someone if you can get a good, nice massage, like one or two massages, treat yourself. Absolutely. Deep tissue massage. Absolutely. Any massage, you know, but the deep tissue is really going to get in there if you have a good massage person.
Let me just say that, Danny, your foam roller, I mean, you joked that it was gas powered. My goodness, we have done at this point, we've done at least like 10 Airbnbs. Every time we go on a trip, I'm like ready to go to bed. The
foundation is cracked.
I mean, your foam roller literally shakes the entire house. It's so loud. However, I will say that foam roller, when we're doing those trips, when you're doing back to back to back to back, big rides.
You can't rest.
Right. And so you've trained for this event. You know, I'm throwing up air quotes here. You know, it's basically our race. We don't race. So we train for these, you know, 5-6 day, you know, riding feasts. And you know what? The foam roller, I will roll every day just so that I'm ready for the next day. So I do hit the foam roller quite often. And like I said, as far as I know, there's no downside to over-rolling. I mean, you can roll twice a day if you want.
You can roll right before a workout. If you wake up and your legs are real tired, you can roll right before a workout, and it's just going to get the blood flow going. So, they're really awesome tools. I don't use it enough. I work full-time. I do the podcast. I'm a dad, and I'm busy, And it's very, very easy to just start watching TV with my kids instead of spending 20 minutes. What's the minimum time to foam roll?
My electric foam roller turns off after 10 minutes. So it's really nice. And I also have a massage gun that does the same thing, except it's like a seven minute interval. And so I'll work on the massage gun's nice because you can like target a spot. And so I'll use that on my calves. Once that 7 minutes is up, then I move to the next part of my leg. And that is something that you can do while you're watching TV.
It's true. Very easy. So I think one of the important things to know is that like when you're hitting a spot and it hurts, that's the spot.
That's the spot. That's the spot.
When you talk about like targeting something with the massage gun, you know, like as you're going, if you're sitting watching TV and you're kind of running it over your legs and you find that spot that hurts, that's the spot. That's the knot. Mm-hmm. The foam roller is an awesome tool. It's something I should definitely be using more of in between rides and certainly on recovery days. When I do have a recovery day and I'm not working out, I almost always get up and do like a half an hour foam roller, like a really long session of foam rolling and hit my legs and hit my back. And it just feels really good. Other things that we haven't really talked about that I definitely use every day, and that's HRV. That's heart rate variability.
Yes.
So for 2 years, I wore a Whoop strap, and it's very expensive. It's a membership. And then after the 2 years, I felt like I had really learned. I learned a lot from wearing it. I do recommend the Whoop strap. It's just very expensive. And what they do is you fill out a daily journal. And so it'll look at your recovery score, look at your heart rate variability, which is heart rate variability is the amount of time in between your heartbeats. And in general, the shorter your HRV shows that you can, so you want a higher HRV number, but really it doesn't matter. Some elite athletes have a really high HRV number and you can work on getting your number higher. But once you're wearing one of these devices or just measuring your HRV, you can actually just do it with a heart rate monitor with a strap and a stopwatch, I think. But there's the Whoop strap. And then there's all the different watches. I don't know if the Apple Watch has one. I know I wear a Garmin Forerunner now, which is kind of a running fitness watch that does HRV, which was important to me. When I went away from the Whoop, I wanted the HRV. I find it to be quite accurate. If your HRV is dropping, then so they're going to set the baseline. If your HRV is dropping, then you're not recovering as well. And if it's going up, then you're recovering better. And so these devices will start showing trends of your HRV. And if you do like a really big ride and you wake up the next day and it's really low, then it might be a day off. Or if you don't sleep well, or if you had a lot to drink, alcohol plummets it. Or if you really didn't eat well and you had a lot of sugar or something like that, you know, which then again affects your sleep. That's another really, really, really huge part of this is sleep. And that's part of the 2 weeks off is to just relax and unwind and not have the mental, I have to get up and train and just like really let yourself sleep. But that's like getting good sleep is so important, you know, so you don't want to be staying up super late. Now, everyone's unique. Everyone has different circadian rhythms and that sort of thing. Yeah. But getting sunlight on your eyeballs during the day, especially first thing in the morning, that affects your hormones. I mean, when you start looking into this, there is just so much on light that we didn't even know about.
You know, I do want to add to that because we should have probably started with this. I feel like we say that all the time. Like we should have probably started with it. Everyone is different. And so, you know, we're throwing out numbers right now, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or, you know, take a day, blah, blah, blah. But that's what works for Dan and I. And so you have to figure out what your body needs. And it might be more than 2 weeks. It might be less than 2 weeks. Maybe you don't need a full 2 weeks. It's really important to kind of figure out what works for you. And you might have to do a little bit of experimenting. Then I also want to add, we talked about like the 2 week recovery, you know, that you should do like once a year. And we also talked about, you know, adding a day of recovery during your workouts during the week. But there's also a recovery week that you should be taking if you're doing hard workouts for like, let's say like 4 to 6 weeks, you know, and I think Trainer Road actually.
This is the primer.
Yeah.
I want to get more into HRV. I want to talk more about the Whoop strap, and that'll have to be, I think, in another episode because I found it really, really useful. And I know people have questions about that. And then there's also other sleep trackers like Fitbits and the Oura Ring. There's all sorts of devices that will show you some sort of recovery score. And I think those things are really useful and have their place. I know you're not wearing anything like that. I would think it would be interesting to you, though. Does that give you a sleep score?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Does it give you HRV? Sleep.
I don't know if it tracks HRV. I'll have to look into it. But yeah, it does all the good stuff, man. It's great.
Okay. I've never heard you talk about, like, my device is telling me to take a break. Have you heard me say that? Actually, my recovery score this morning, I rode Harmony Hill yesterday on the hardtail, and my recovery this morning was a 1. I've never seen that before. I was like, so don't train.
Yeah.
And I still rode the pump track and then lifted weights, you know.
Yeah. See, terrible at recovery.
Yeah. I'm not letting some device rule my world. I mean, come on.
Right.
The robots haven't taken over yet. I'll make my own decisions. Thank you very much. Watch. Meanwhile, I was like falling asleep in my car on the drive home. I was so tired.
I don't say that.
Damn you, watch. Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right. So the trainer road sets me up for recovery weeks.
Yes.
Trainer Road sets me up for recovery weeks. It has you train hard, and they're all constantly adjusting that, but it has you train hard for 3 or 4 weeks, and then there's a recovery week. The longest my recovery week ever is 6 days, because on Sunday we ride.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. I might say something to Sage, like, if you want to take it easy today, it's fine with me because it's technically a recovery day.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. I'll keep that in mind. Thanks. Yeah, duly right. Noted. Yeah. Guess whose recovery week it isn't? Mine. We riding.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. So, but it is important. And there's so much to talk about here. But in Trainer Road, they just started this red light, green light program. So they're constantly adding to the app. And so after a really hard workout or a ride outside, it'll on your Trainer Road calendar, it'll show as yellow. We think you might be fatigued. Take it a little bit easy. Or red. Take the day off. And it'll actually say, don't train today. And if there's a workout on that day, it'll take it off.
Yeah.
And so I looked at my workout for Friday after a hard ride on Wednesday. Well, a hard ride for my body. I mean, I guess I wasn't really ready for it. 2.5 hours in the hardtail. I felt okay, but apparently, and I've been under a little bit of stress, and you know, this is stressed out Danny, you know, I'm still pretty happy dude, but nonetheless, I've been tired and it changed that my next ride from like a pretty tough sweet spot ride to basically a recovery ride.
Yeah.
It just updated it. So, I mean, really cool. So, I mean, the tech aspect of this, whether it be your HRV monitor, or your Fitbit, or your Oura Ring, or your Garmin watch, and then the Trainer Road. I don't know if Zwift has something like that also. RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com. And YouTube comments. Let us know. What are you using, a wearable? Are you using a device? How helpful have you found that? Which one are you using? What do you have? And what do you recommend? So let's get some comments in there, and we'll get some more, and we will do an episode talking more about the technology side. There's a lot of tech to talk about mountain bike, but we can talk about the technology side of recovery also, and you know, how useful some of these devices are. And I guess Wahoo probably has something also, and of course Garmin is heavily involved in this sort of thing. So there's a lot of mountain bikers and road riders that are using these, right?
Yeah, man. So much to be grateful for all these like technical advancements. This didn't exist, you know, when we first started riding. A lot of this stuff wasn't around.
Yeah. Well, we started riding, there was no podcast. I mean, we were getting information from Mountain Bike Action Magazine and Dirt Rag.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of them were saying don't ride for 2 weeks.
No.
Maybe they did. I don't know. I don't remember reading an article on recovery. If there was an article on recovery, I was probably just like skip. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get to the new dropper post that works half the time. Come on. Yeah. All right.
That's right.
Well, you know what we didn't talk about? We didn't talk about our last ride at Mount Penn. I totally skipped our ride segment.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I
want to say that ride, it was a wet ride. It was wet and that had rained earlier. It's Mount Penn. Sage and I know all the trails that are all rock. We stayed on the rocks, and it's a really hard ride because you're just grinding through the tech constantly. Yes. And Mount Penn is has a lot of elevation where those rocks are. And we had a lot of fun. We did the boulder field. And we both kind of like started off really well and then hesitated and then didn't do well. And then we got it. And the boulder field, Sage will put the video in. The boulder field is this really long, just technical kind of, it's flat, it's low consequence, but it's really hard. It's really tight. It's got a lot of moves in it. It starts off with a skinny kind of like pop up onto this big boulder and then a skinny off of it. And then a slight incline where you have to be in a big gear, 4 or 5, and you just have to be just crushing through this and getting up onto these boulders, and there's all these different lines. And then the second half of it has a couple really tight turns.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I did it on the Evo. I did it on the Firebird, but it was the first time I did it on the Evo, and I didn't even say anything about how long the bike was. I was just like, I'm getting this. And once I got to the part that it's like super, super tight, I just kept my momentum and I went. I had no problem. So again, the long bike, 2 for 2 on getting through the old school, really tight tech, because I also got through No Joke, which is super tight. So,
we're
continuing to experiment with that, but we're 2 for 2. Now, I do feel like I have some responsibility in what we're going to talk about next, because I've been manifesting a new bike for you. But I didn't mean to break your old bike. I feel terrible about this. I was like, universe, not like this.
Mm.
So what happened? We're flying down Dane's Flow Round Trail, which has the doubles in it that we love, and it's got a great drop. It's just like an awesome way to end the day. And you were crushing it. And as soon as we get back down to the bottom, you tell me.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I am one of those people that in my riding, I can feel the different nuances. And I was coming down Dane's Flow Round and I was like, something feels dead in the bike. Like something felt like the frame was dead. It's a very hard thing to explain, but it just didn't have a snap to it. That's a terrible word to use, because when I looked at the frame, it was snapped. No, it wasn't snapped completely, but I had a pretty big crack.
It lost its springiness. Yeah, it lost its responsiveness.
Yeah. You
got enough miles on that bike to know how that bike should feel. And you've done that trail enough to know exactly how that trail should feel.
Right.
And you are, as we've talked about, an intuitive rider. So I'm zero surprised that you felt that before you saw it.
Yeah.
But we get back down to the parking. We get down to the parking lot. You had experienced this. And I got down there and you told me immediately you knew exactly where to look.
Yeah. Yeah. I cracked the seat stay. It's almost fully cracked around. I mean, bike is completely unrideable. But to kind of bring this back to the recovery aspect, that crash happened on Carla, a slab that we were talking about in a previous podcast. That crash happened on Carla the week prior. And you know what? I feel like I might have crashed because I think I was tired. You know, I was looking back through my Strava. And I'm starting to build up. I had gone through some terrible things this summer that have really just knocked me off my game. But I've made a concerted,
personal
struggles. And I've made a concerted effort to really up my fitness game in the last 2 or 3 months. And so I've been pushing harder and harder, stacking up more workouts.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed, and we're talking about this, you know, when you're doing four to six weeks, you know, how do you know when you should take that 1 week? Well, for me, I make silly mistakes. And Carla wasn't the only one that I was making silly mistakes on. It just happened to be the one that was most obvious. But I'll put the video in there. But I went over Carla and you could see the bike hit that bottom rock. And it just hits it right on that chainstay. I think that's where I cracked it. And so note to self, like recovery is important. Rest is important. You know, it could end up in like a really bad catastrophic accident. You know, where you're just like, oh,
you don't have, you're not using Trainer Road. So you don't have like that, oh, this is a recovery week.
Yeah.
So you're really basing your, like, I think I need a recovery week purely on intuition, or are you tracking and saying, okay, here's a rest week, here's a rest week?
Yeah. You know, I don't know where my brain was at, because I typically do. I typically track it on Strava and I say, okay, I did four to six weeks, you know, really hard. Let's take a week and take it easy. I'm just so excited to be getting my fitness back that I've just been pushing hard and not, I've been ignoring it. And that was a really dumb move. And like I said, Carla wasn't the first one that I made a silly mistake on. And I think you've heard me pass up a few features because I just wasn't feeling, I was making silly mistakes up until that point. And I've just been passing up a lot of stuff lately. And I think that's what it was. So, you know, note
well,
to
you've
self.
Been riding, I feel like you've been riding really well, but. So you think that you were mentally,
yeah.
You think because Carla, I mean, riding down a slab is not all that physically demanding, but
no,
mentally, you want to be on your game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, it is what it is. Danny, I've been doing.
It's a big, very consequential slab, and you went down really hard, and we were really, really happy and pleased and grateful that you didn't get hurt because there's a ton of rock right there, and you did go down hard.
Yeah.
But apparently your bike took the brunt of it.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got over 4,500 miles on that bike. It's been awesome for you. And the fact I thought when I saw it, I was like, it fatigued and cracked. And then later on you were like, no, I looked at the video and I think it was a crash. And so, you know, that bike still was going to keep on trucking. I don't know what bike, I don't know if it was because it was older. Did it crack easier? You know, like we'll just never know. What have you looked at? I know when you put it on Strava, you had a ton of people comment and there was a fair amount of people talking about carbon repair. Is it too big of a crack to think about repairing it?
I don't know. I some people have told me it's in an ideal location for a carbon repair. My first thing is to go to Ibis and see if they actually have a rear triangle. Unfortunately, the bike is 6 years old, so I'm not sure if they'll have that available. So if that's not available, then yeah, we'll try and go the repair route. And if the repair route isn't something that's possible, then, you know, we'll go from there, you know, but I got two other bikes. I got the fat bike. I got the single speed, both which I rode this week to kind of get my body used to being on the hardtail again, because, you know, I'm probably not going to have the full suspension for at least, you know, a week or two, if not more, you know, so you better start getting used to riding that. But
we'll have to do the hardtail episode soon because I rode my hardtail yesterday.
That's right.
And and it really kind of beat the crap out of me, and it's a really nice hardtail. It's just I've gotten so spoiled. I've gone longer and longer travel. I've gotten so spoiled by how great these big travel bikes are now and how efficient they are, but riding the hardtail is awesome also. It is more work. We are heading into like mountain bike travel trip season. We are heading into bike park season. We definitely need to get you a full suspension bike, but I feel really good about it. I feel really confident something is going to come along. I mean, there's really interesting things happening in the bike industry right now. Unfortunately, a lot of bike companies are going out of business, and it's not like you want to get one of those bikes because you want a bike that you want to get the bike that's perfect for you. But I feel really confident that I'm manifesting a full suspension bike for you. My manifestation broke your old bike by mistake. I apologize about that. I didn't know the universe was going to do that. It was not the plan. But this is going to create some sort of situation where you're going to get an awesome new bike. Anyone that doesn't know, Trail Stage, follow Trail Stage, subscribe. If you like the content, think about joining the Patreon. He's a full-time creator. He's super, super talented. And certainly watching and supporting the podcast. We don't have anything other on the podcast other than watching it right now. We're so new, but you can buy Trail Sage gear. There's all sorts of ways to support Trail Sage. And he needs a bike. He's making a go. He's a starving artist right now, everyone. He needs a bike. We started GoFundMe. We're going to start a GoFundMe. Or you can just join his Patreon. Just join his Patreon and just be like, dude, get a bike. I can't wait to see it. But we're reaching out to bike companies. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see what happens. Something good's going to come. If anyone's listening and knows a bike rep or has, hey, listen, you know, I think this would be a great fit for Sage. And I happen to know that this guy owns this company new bike day. It's coming, right?
You know what? Yes, absolutely. And let me, this will be a good time to get into my gratitude, because my gratitude is actually my mojo. And it's, you'd mentioned it. It's been 6 years I've been on that bike. And, you know, the first thing that I felt when I came down to the lot and I saw the crack in the frame, I wasn't upset. I wasn't even angry. I wasn't upset. I felt like immediately this immense sense of gratitude, which was like really awkward. And I think I astonished you because you were like, how are you not angry? And I just,
dude, I was blown away by your reaction. So impressed. So impressed. Yeah. I love it. And it's the right kind of, it's the right kind of energy. It's the right kind of vibration to have. Anyone that knows about the law of attraction, it was your natural energy, but to have that kind of energy of gratitude, that you just open up like for more good things to come to you. Yes. I was blown away by your instinctive reaction.
I was just overwhelmed in that moment with a feeling of appreciation. This bike it's been there for me. You know, it's been there through some really, really hard times. It's been on some awesome trips, you know, to Arizona with you and New England. And this bike has seen me through all of it, the highs, the lows. And you know what, Danny? I mean, we're talking 6 years and 4,500 miles, but that's 6 years and 4,500 miles of Mount Penn rides. Like, this isn't like white clay single track. Yeah. I put that bike through. Oh, I mean, God bless that bike. Like, no bike should be treated the way that I treated it. So,
well, yeah, there goes the resale value. Hey, everyone, right. You have a chance to buy Trail Sages, completely destroyed, run into the ground. Oh, yeah, it's a collector's item. It's a collector's item. Yes. Someday, you know what? If you sign it, someday that bike's going to be worth a lot of money. when you go to the Ride and Lift Hall of Fame to see the original Trail Sage Ibis Mojo 3, they don't make anymore. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of a big deal around here.
I love that bike.
That bike's been awesome for you. And you've progressed on that bike, may I say.
Right.
I mean, in the last 6 years, like, our riding has skyrocketed as far as, you know, how good of mountain bikers I think we're firmly in the 20%. Range now, top 20% of mountain. Are you listening, Ibis? Are you listening? I mean, this guy's practically a pro level mountain biker. Give or take a couple percentage points. You know what else? The gratitude. You know, you mentioned this, and I didn't hear you say it just now. But the other thing with the gratitude of that day was not just how great the bike had been for you throughout its lifespan, but the fact that it had this massive crack in it and it didn't fail. You didn't have a catastrophic failure. We did a lot of high speed, you know, as we always do. We were jumping on Skyline and then we did Danes and you hit the doubles. I mean, if you had paced something really hard, I mean, if there had been a catastrophic failure and that bike had actually cracked, like, you could have seriously gotten hurt. And so just gratitude that you realized it was busted and nothing bad happened. It's really fortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how about you, Danny? What are you grateful for?
Well, I you know, it's a silly thing. It might sound like a silly thing for a mountain bike gratitude, but my mountain bike gratitude this week is the vibrating foam roller.
Yeah.
It just makes a huge difference on how I feel and how I recover. And it works, and it does save you a lot of money on getting massage. There's nothing like getting a real good deep tissue massage, but being able to use that foam roller has really, really skyrocketed my recovery. So Ride and Laugh 1 at Gmail and comment on the YouTube. What do you do for recovery? Who uses a foam roller? Who uses a vibrating foam roller? And if you get one, totally give us your feedback. Like, yo, I started using this thing, and what are your results? Have you heard of these things? I don't really know anyone else that uses it, but it's not also something that comes up in conversation.
Yeah, right?
We don't really talk about recovery. We're not really back in the parking lot being stoked about the ride talking about recovery. No one really wants to do it. No one's really excited about it, but it's totally a necessary part. We're tackling the tough subjects here on Ride and Laugh.
Yes.
We're talking about the things nobody wants to talk about.
Yes.
The listener's like, or listen to. Yeah, let me see what Rogan's talking about.
Well, listen, since you stole, I didn't have it as my gratitude, but I had it as my mountain bike tip was the foam roller. But I will change that. I'm thinking on the fly here because I did some recovery and I'm thinking better now. I'm going to switch over to the electronic stim. Oh my gosh, revolutionary. Yes. So if you have a nagging injury, and listen, I have used this electronic stim because you recommended it. And these things are not expensive. You can get one for like under $100 easy. And basically what it is it's two pads that you stick.
What is the name of it? I was not ready for this. There's a name for these devices.
I thought it was called an electronic stim. or stem?
No, there's a specific name for them. There's a specific name for it. I was not ready for this. I kind of forgot about mine, but yeah. All right. So go on, continue. I'll see if I can remember it, but yeah.
So it's these like two pads that you stick on your body, and then it's connected to a small device, probably the size of your bike computer. At least mine is. And you can set the amount of shock level that you want. And basically it just pulses.
Stimulus. TENS machine. That's what it's called.
Thank you. TENS machine. There you go. So you can set the amount of shock that you want it to do. And basically it contracts and releases your muscles. And my goodness, it produces a ton of blood flow. That's how it works. So it works to heal your body by contracting and releasing your muscles. And my God, it's so handy. I use my stim probably at least, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. Anytime I get a cramp or a pull in a muscle, man, I just throw that thing on. Or if I have you get a stiff neck. Oh man, stop it. Yeah. It is wonderful. Yeah. So that is my mountain bike tip.
That's a good one. And things I remember that I found it for an elbow. I had a golfer's elbow, which I guess is the opposite of tennis elbow. And I had gotten it from weightlifting the wrong way. I was doing these triceps extensions and I let my arms go back too far. And I kind of like felt a pop and this thing just wasn't healing. This is so super, super long time ago. And there was like very little blood flow in there. I saw a doctor and he was like, yeah, just don't do anything for like 8 months. And I was like, yeah, well, that's not happening. And then I went to I went to a home show with my wife, like a convention center where it was just like, you know, roofers and kitchen people and, you know, like it was a home show. And this guy was there selling this TENS machine. And he said it'll increase blood flow, and especially if spots where there's not a lot of blood flow. And I started using it. And he said, like, if it's acute injuries, like 3 times a day for 3 weeks or something like that, like you have to use it a lot. And I did, and it worked. And you can get them fairly inexpensively online. You can get them really, really good ones. I remember Hammer Nutrition sold one, and that you would like, it had like 4 pads and you would put them on your muscles and you would use them for recovery after rides. So like professional racers doing multi-day stage races, Tour de France and that sort of thing. I think some of them are, I don't know if they still are, but I know that they were using these. I can't say for the tour, but I know that like they were using these devices to increase blood flow and speed recovery. And so, but it's, you have to put it on your quads and then you have to put it on your hamstrings and then you have to put it on your calves. Like quite a bit of commitment, but you know, again, that's the difference between the pros and us.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. 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 So, well, that's a good one. That's an interesting one. I haven't used mine in a long time, but you know, some of these things they kind of come in and out of my consciousness. I kind of forget about them, but the one we can't forget about is just taking good old time off. And in that time off, obviously we recommend the foam roller and eating well and getting your sleep and just feeling good.
And listening to the podcast.
Listening to the podcast, absolutely. If you want to slow it down so it takes a little bit longer, that's probably a really bad idea. That's a bad idea. Yeah, don't slow it down. We're talking long enough. I think you're getting enough of us each week anyway, as it is. Well, we appreciate everyone listening. Let us know in the comments anything about recovery that we missed, anything that you want us to talk about, anything you want to deep dive on. And anything that we did talk about that you have some feedback or some input. We love seeing everyone's comments. RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com if you want to send a longer message or if you don't have access to the YouTube. And then on the YouTube, definitely click that bell icon so you're getting Sage's Ride and Laugh shorts because
that's right.
They're awesome. He's putting the work in, but they're really, really fun to watch. So check that out. If you're still listening, you are definitely one of us. You're a mountain biker. You love riding. You deal with recovery when you have to, but we're getting stronger and that's where we want to be. We want to be riding. We want to be fit. We want to feel great. And recovery is part of that. So absolutely jump on board. Thank you for listening. Please rate and subscribe on YouTube, rate and subscribe on your podcast player, set the auto downloads. The downloads are really key. Help the algorithm, throw a comment in, tell your friends. But most of all, thanks for listening. We have so much gratitude and appreciation for everyone listening. We're having a ton of fun. We hope you're enjoying it as well. Everyone, have a great week. Ride and laugh.
I'll see everyone.